And we're holding on page Nun Tes in Baba Basra, Ois Lamed Aleph. Continuing with what's going on with Eov, we started learning yesterday that there was something, there was at least one thing that Eov said. We're besosav lechota b'libre chota, even though he didn't verbally say something that is openly against Hashem and Apikorsis, nevertheless, he was thinking it in his mind, and we said there was a pasuk which actually has a double meaning in it, which in fact, Abaye and Rava and an earlier generation, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, are arguing what his primary meaning was, but the point is, Maharsha says he deliberately phrased it that way precisely so that you could take it either way. So now the Gemara continues with more things that Eov said that are wrong Apitoyra. He says in a pasuk, "Al daitcha ki loy ersha." It would be if it were your will, then I would not be wicked. Ve'in miyad chamatzel, and there's nobody who can save from your hand. This is part of a speech in which Eov is addressing Hashem and saying, it's all your fault that if you the friends are saying that I'm a rasha, then it's really he's turning to Hashem and saying it's all your fault. If you wanted, I wouldn't be. Omar Rava, so Rava says, Bikish Eev lifteris kala olam kulim in adin. With that expression, Eev is trying to exempt everybody from Hashem's judgment. Omar Lafana be saying to Hashem, Ribbono shel olam, Barasa shur parsois of sukkos, you created an ox with its hooves split, so that which is one of the simone tahara. Barasa chamer parsois of klotus. And then you created the donkey with unsplit hooves, so it's not kosher. Similarly, barasa gan eden, barasa gehenim. You created gan eden and gehenim. Barasa tzadikim, barasa rishoyim. And you created tzadikim through the yetzer tov, and you created rishoyim through the yetzer hara. Mima akav al yadcha, who can stop you? So ve'en mi yadcha matzil, he says, there's nobody can save from your hand. People who are doing averus, people who listen to the yetzer hara, are in effect forced to do it. So in other words, he's denying the whole concept of Bechira Chofshis. Now, we know it's not like that. Maharsha refers to the Gemara in Nidda that says that when a baby is conceived, a malach brings the fertilized drop in front of Hashem, and the whole life course of the person is determined. Are they going to be strong or weak or smart or not so smart, etc.? But tzaddik v'rasha lekama. Hashem does not determine whether the person is going to be a tzaddik or a rasha, because for that, a person has bechira chofshis. So Eov is denying that point. So he mentioned the ones that he mentions, particularly the ox and the donkey. Maharsha points out that you have whenever the Torah lists the kosher animals, the shur always goes first, showing it's like the highest level of kosher animal, as opposed to the chamer. The very name of it, chomer, represents materiality, the mundanity and lowliness and crassness of the world. And you don't say that the ox gets punishment, gets reward, or the donkey gets punishment. That's just how they are. And the same thing, he's arguing that Hashem, you created tzaddikim and rishayim, and they're each forced to be the way they are. So Maya Hadrul or Maya Hadrul Chavrul Eiv. So what did Eiv's friends answer him? A few chapters later, which is actually it's in Eliphaz's next speech to him. We talked about a few days ago the structure of Sefer Eiv. Each of the friends makes a statement, and Eiv responds, and then the next friend speaks up, and Eiv responds, etc. So now Eiv says this in Perek Yud. Then you have that's still in the first round of debates. Then after that you have one of the other friends so far speaks up and makes some points, then Eov responds to it with another long speech, and then it's Eliphaz's turn again. So basically, as soon as Eliphaz has the chance, he being the leader of the friends, then he says, "Af ata tofer yira, you also would be destroying fear of Hashem, the sigra sicha lifnei kael, and you're speaking a degraded kind of speech before Hashem." Me or the word v'sigra can mean to reduce, like the shorash gora means to reduce. Sometimes it also actually means the contrary. It means like to speak too much. You're talking too much in front of Hashem. No, you. This is what Eliphaz, one of the friends, is telling Eiv. On the contrary, bara kodesh baruch hu yetzahara. Yes, Hashem created the yetzahara. Bara loy torah tavlin, but He also created the torah as an antidote to it. Bara tavlin literally means a spice. In other words, you have the ability. that the Torah is a, the Torah will teach you to do the right thing, and don't think that a person is forced to follow his Yetzer Hara. On the contrary, the Torah can be like a spice that flavors the Yetzer Hara, and therefore that now you're able to use the tendencies of the Yetzer Hara for good, and that's what a person is expected to do. Don't think that a person doesn't have the Chirah Chofshis. Marsha refers in this connection to a couple of the other psukim before and after this as well, in Eliphaz's response, where also those phrases that Eliphaz is using over there, representing also this point that the now he doesn't mention in this pasuk the afatatofer sicha, the afatatofer yidav sigra sicha lefnekeo. There's nothing in that pasuk itself about Torah. So where is the Gemara getting that from? So Marsha explains from the succeeding psukim, from the following psukim, you have something. He uses the expression the sivcha l'shon arumim. You should choose the tongue of the crafty, which refers to the wisdom and craftiness of Torah, which helps you outsmart the Yetzer Hara. And he goes on with a couple of other psukim, a couple of other phrases from Eliphaz's psukim over there that show that he's expressing this idea. That he's expressing this idea, that he's making this point to Eev. Now, the fact is, I mean, what was Eev thinking? I mean, okay, Marshall is saying he's just denying outright the fact that that Tzadik V'Rosha Lekoma, but, you know, you have the Alter Rebbe points it out on the first page of Tanya that, you know, the fact is that Eev's a smart guy, and he was a Yorei Elikim and all that, so where is he getting this idea that the Eivishter created Tzadikim and Rishoyim when Tzadik V'Rosha Lekoma? So later on in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe explains the point that to a certain limited extent, Eev is right. There are people who Hashem created with the natural ability to be able to be tzaddikim, to be able to completely vanquish and get rid of their Yetzer Hara. Most people are not. Most people are Beinonim. Most people have at best the ability to be Beinonim, so they're still going to have a very active Yetzer Hara. Eev's wrong in that a person is not fated to necessarily follow the Yetzer Hara, but he's correct in the limited sense that Barasa tzaddikim, Barasa Roshoyim, Hashem, you created people who have the capability of being tzaddikim, and then you have people who are born with the capability that they can avoid being Roshoyim, but they're still going to be like Roshoyim in that they have a very active Yetzer Hara. And Alter Rebbe makes that point in detail later on in Tanya. So the point is, in other words, that yes, there is most definitely Bechira Chofshis, and don't think otherwise, says Eliphaz to him. Dorash Rava, the Rava Darshan in this connection, another pasuk from another pasuk from one of Eev's speeches. My dichtiv, what does he mean when he says later in one of his speeches later on in the sefer Perikotes, he's going through all the wonderful things that he used to do. That is, when he was rich and famous and powerful and everything, and basically saying, and now look how miserable I am. So he says, Birkas Oved Alai Tovoi, the bracha of the one who was lost would come upon me, V'lev Almana Arnin, and I would make happy the heart of an Almana, of a widow. So you're talking about a person, that Oved, you're talking about a person who thinks that he's lost. So what does that mean? Birkas Oved Alai Tovoi, the first half of that pasuk, the one who is thinking that he's lost is going to give me a bracha. Melamed, this teaches us that Eev would steal, or at least pretend to steal, a field from Yisoimim or Mashbicha, and then improve it. He would work on it, and improve it, fertilize it, cultivate it, whatever, or Machzir Lahem, and then give it back to them. So here they thought they had lost it. They thought that Eev, being this powerful guy, that he took over their field. They're never getting it back, and then they get it back. Now, is he allowed to do that? In halacha, you're not even allowed to steal even as a joke, or even in order to teach the other guy a lesson, and different other things like that. Famous story involving the Baal Shem Tov of a guy who, his friend had left money around the house. He took it, figuring he's going to teach the guy a lesson. To make a long story short, 10 years passed, and he couldn't figure out how to return it to him without causing a stink, and then the Baal Shem Tov meets him on the road and tells him, look, you got to return it, no questions asked. So how is Eev doing this? So the Yad Ramah points out, you know, listen, we said before, one possibility is that Eev was not Jewish. In that case, then those detailed dinim don't apply to him. He would be entitled to do this, whereas a Jew would taka not. On the other hand, different Mephoshim talk about different ways that it would be allowed al pi halacha. Marsha points out, first of all, over here, the fact is that Yisoimim don't always know how to take care of property that they were left. They didn't work for it themselves, so therefore they tend to fritter it away. So instead, Ea would take over the field, and this way, in other words, he's working, or it's more, in other words, along the Maharsha doesn't spell this out, but it seems to be more along the idea that Gemara talks about in some other places. Let's say you go into somebody else's property and you start cultivating and planting and whatever, doing things that are expected to in that property. So not stealing it per se, but even though the Gemara is using the word goizel, but in other words, like going and working it without their consent. But then so he treats it basically as if he's his own field. And Maharsha also adds, we learned before, Maisi Yada Berachta, there was a special bracha in everything Ea did. So therefore, now when he gives them the field with all the rich crops and everything that they have in it, then he birkas over a lie tove. The bracha would come to me, and because of me, because I'm the one who made it all happen with the tremendous hatzlacha and the tremendous good mazel that I always had. So there's that. There's different other explanations exactly how he was doing this without being a problem. One thing is that the Chidah points out in his Pirush on the Pasuk, he says that actually the idea would be, it goes together with the second half of the Pasuk about the Almana. Sometimes, yeah, we know in Halacha when a woman's husband has passed away, then she's entitled to collect her ksuba. But sometimes we may have a situation, instead, usually she would collect it from the land, that from the real estate that was left to the Yisoyim. But sometimes there can be situations where, instead, they have a right to tell her, you know what, we have reason to believe that our father left you a bundle of money to pay off the ksuba, and therefore that's reserved for it rather than taking away the fields from us. So Ea would get involved in a case like that and pretend as though the field no longer belongs to them, so that the almana can't collect it from them. This way it's safe for them, and then later on he'd square away things. He'd make, fix everything up and make sure that the almana doesn't get deprived of what she's supposed to. The leva, and when he continues in the pasuk, the leva almana aunin, when he says I would gladden the heart of the almana, that means kol heich dehava ika almana, in any place where there lived an almana, delois have a nasty law, where nobody was interested in marrying her for whatever reason, have a ozel shdei shme shodi shme Allah, he would go and place his name on her, meaning he would pretend that he has something to do with her. So it could be Rashi explains he would claim that she's his relative, or he'd put out rumors that he himself is interested in marrying her. And then and now everybody is eager to marry a relative of the famous Eev, or Eev was interested in her, so then she must be a good catch, and therefore he would gladden her in that way that then she gets married where otherwise she might not have been able to.
But you're not going to give her money, right?
So, no, not necessarily give her money. But in other words, the point is that he would make it that now she's more eligible for marriage. Now people are more likely to be interested in making a shidduch with her. The Rif also ties both things together over here, that he'd take the field, so he'd make it look like he's taking over the fields of the person who passed away, and that he wants to take the wife as well. So now everybody is interested in marrying her as well, because they figure the two things go together. Meanwhile, he would go and spend money on the field and improve it. Meanwhile, the almana gets married, and then he returns it to the Yisoyim. So the two things go together. He gets the bracha from the Yisoyim, and he made happy the almana. More psukim from Eev's speeches, where we see things that he said that he shouldn't have, things that he said that he shouldn't have said. In one of his Udi speeches, he says, "Lu shoko yishoko kasi." If only my anger and my upset could be weighed. So in other words, if only like you, there could be a balance scale to weigh all the punishments that I got relative to anything that I did bad. Omar Rava or Rav, after the Pume de Eev, Eev deserves to have dirt stuffed into his mouth for saying like that. Chavrusa Klapishmaya, is he talking to Hashem as though we're buddies, as though we're friends, like we're equals, like we should weigh my claims against yours? That's not a respectful way to talk to Hashem. So why are we saying this? It's not a respectful way to speak to Hashem. Why are we saying Davka that dirt should be stuffed in his mouth? Ion Yaakov points out, there's an expression in Megillas Eicha, Yitin ve'ofer pihu ulai yesh tikva. The pasuk says a person should be ready to put his mouth in the dirt, maybe there'll still be hope. In other words, as low as a person is, even if he's having to his mouth is down to the ground, nevertheless, there still can be hope that Hashem will save him. well over here. In fact, that's how it was. So Eev should have dirt in his mouth at this point, and later on, Ulai Yesh Tikva, there will be a future for him. There is at the end of the sefer where he gets everything back double. Ben Yahyada makes a different point of it. We find that the Nachash spoke in a chutzpahdika way about Hashem. He claimed to Adam and Chava that Hashem is jealous of you, and that's why he doesn't want you to eat from the Eitz Hadas, etc., etc. And what was his punishment? Ofer Teuchel. You have to eat dust for the rest of your life. So the same way, Eev is talking in a chutzpahdika way towards Hashem, so therefore Rav or Rav is saying he deserves to have the same punishment as the snake and have dirt in his mouth. Similarly, a few chapters later, Eev says, "Lo yesh beinenu mechiyach." There isn't even a rebuker between us. Somebody who like could rebuke the both of us, me and Hashem, and say and see which one is right. Yoshes yodeh al shneinu. He put his hand on both of us and figure out who has the better of the argument. So again, Omer Rava or Rav, after the Pumi to Eev. Eev deserves to have dirt stuffed in his mouth for that also. Kumiash Evet Shmechiachas Rabbi. How can a servant, Eev, go in and tell off his master? How can he say, Lo Yesh Beinenu Mechiach? There should be somebody to tell off Hashem you're doing wrong. You don't talk that way. You don't talk that way towards Hashem. So therefore that also is a chutzpahdik thing for him to say. Another thing, he says later on in a much later chapter, he describes all kinds of good things that he did and said, I don't deserve to have all this happen to me. So he says, Bris karati la'enai, I made a covenant with my eyes, Uma esbonan al basula, how would I even look at a basula inappropriately? So he's praising himself like I always kept to the ultimate degree of tznius, and I wouldn't even look at a woman when I'm not supposed to. So again, Omar Rava. So Rava says, you know, look at the contrast between him and Avraham. And again, we have two different Gersoris over here. The Gersa of the Ein Yaakov is we're not criticizing Eev for it, but we are pointing out the contrast between him and Avraham. Eev below the Dela in the Stackle. So Eev is priding himself. He wouldn't look at a woman who's not his. So a Basula who's not his wife. Aval, but as we'll see with Avraham, went to him even one better. The Gersa in the printed Gemara is after Lepumi de Eev, that again, dirt should be put in Eev's mouth, that he's praising himself like that. Eob Achra Naisa, he wouldn't look at another woman, but the contrast is Avraham afilu b'didela nistakel. Avraham, we know, didn't even look at his own wife. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, when they're on their way to Mitzrayim, and Avraham says to Sarah, Hine no yodaiti, now I know, ki isha yifas mara up, that you're a beautiful woman, and therefore we have to do something to prevent you from falling into the hands of the Mitzrayim. Implying that until now he didn't know that she's beautiful. So he didn't even look at her to notice her beauty, whereas Eev is saying, I never looked at any woman who's not mine, implying he has no problem with looking at his wife. So one gear says we're not criticizing Eev, we're just saying that he didn't reach the ultimate height that Avraham did. Bechlal, Mefoshim points out that, you know, Marsha points out of you, the fact is that the fact is that the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, you're not allowed to be Mekadosh a woman until you see her. You even though Lahalocha, you are allowed to be Mekadosh by proxy, you shouldn't. You should first see the woman and know that you want to marry her over here. So how does Avraham marry her without seeing her? Somehow Shaw says, sure, he probably saw her when she was little. But ever since they got married, so he knows in advance that as a girl that she was beautiful. But now, since they got married, he figured that by now, decades later, she's probably not so beautiful anymore. She was at least 60 years old at the time when they went down to Mitzrayim. Avraham was 75. Sarah was 10 years younger than Avraham, so she was in her 60s already. So now, though, he happened to notice her. Marsha refers to the Medrash Tanchuma that says, how taka did he notice? They were passing by a body of water, and he noticed a reflection in it. So all of a sudden, now he realized, you know, we say, Marsha refers to the famous thing, that when she was 100, she was as free of Avedis as when she was 20, and when she was 20, she was as beautiful as at 7. So Avraham realized for the first time, now I realize, after all these decades, you're still as beautiful as you were before, and therefore we have to take steps to do something about it. On the other hand, Maharsha says another possibility is we can say, when we say that Avraham didn't, that Avraham kept the whole Torah before it was given, that would mean primarily after his bris milah. Well, this is years before that, so therefore maybe he wasn't yet keeping all the dinim of the Torah, including all the dirabbanans, and therefore he may have taka married her without seeing her. Even Yaakov points out another point as well. The reason why a man shouldn't be mekadesh a woman until he sees her is because b'derech hatev, b'derech klal, he's going to look at her after they're married, and you don't want that afterwards he's going to find some flaw in her, and he's not going to love her as much. Mashenken Avraham, to begin with, had decided that midas chasidus, that he's not going to look at her even after they're married, so there's no problem then whether he looks at her to ascertain whether she's beautiful before they're married, says Ion Yaakov. Anyway, as far as the two girsois over here, whether we're criticizing Eov for this or not, so again, the girsa of the Ein Yaakov is not criticizing Eov, and Hagoris Habach from the Gemara also takes out the phrase after the Pumid Eov from the printed Gemara, because what's wrong with it? Okay, he's not of the caliber of Avraham Avinu, there's still nothing wrong with what he said. On the other hand, Maharsha says that no, we can keep those words after the Pumi. What we're saying is, all of this, everything that we're saying after the Pumi to Eov, is everything where Eov is complaining and acting and then saying that Hashem is not being fair to me. Well then, part of this, he's beginning his section over here by saying, Bris Karati La'ene, look at what a chosid I've always been. I never even looked at another woman, and therefore, why do I deserve all this to happen to me? So look, you're not even as great as Avraham, and Avraham did not complain ever to Hashem, no matter how much hardships he went through. So therefore, we can well say, after the Pumi De'ir, that he deserves to have dirt stuffed in his mouth for thinking, because I'm such a great guy, therefore I don't deserve this. Meanwhile, you should have at least learned from Avraham and not complained to Hashem ever. Okay. Another pasuk that Eov says that there's something bad about it. He says, "Kola onan vayelach," just as a cloud disappears and goes away, came the same way. Yored Sheol, one who goes down to the grave, lo yala, is never going to come up for me. I mean, never going to come up. What happened to Tchias Mason? Amar Rava or Rava Mikat Melama Chakofer Eov Tchias Mason. That's exactly what it means. At this point, Eov is denying the concept of Tchias Mason. Maharsha says, at least on a pshat level, you don't have to say that. Tanashi, on the pasuk, just says that it means, in other words, like after all the sicknesses and disasters and everything that have befallen me, I'm never going to recover. I'm never going to be back to what I was. He's not denying Tchias Mason per se. He's just saying that after all this v'derech hateva, I'm going to end up dying from this, and I'm never going to see goodness in my life again. He was wrong about that, because at the end of the sefer he does, but he didn't know that at the time. But at least it's not clear. Point to that. Okay. Now, Ion Yaakov points out, before we had one opinion in the Gemara, according when we discussed the whole question of whether Eov was a Jew or not, we said one explanation was that he was put in this world, the Kabbal Scharai, and then when he spoke disrespectfully towards Hashem, then he got his Schar back in this world, but he lost his Adam Abba. Well, that would fit very nicely with this. If he denied Tchias HaMesim, then, as the Mishnah tells us in Sanhedrin, then he forfeits Tchias HaMesim. On the other hand, the other way of looking at it, the Gemara is going to tell us later on, coming up soon, Einonim Nitpas B'Shas Tzarei, a person is not held responsible for what he says when he's in pain and distress. And according to that, then, even despite all these things that Eov is saying badly, nevertheless, Hashem doesn't hold it against him, and he doesn't necessarily lose his place in Olam Haba because of it. Befrat, also what we talked about yesterday from the Malbim, that really all these things that he's saying are just like to poke holes in the friend's arguments so that we can establish the truth, then for sure he's not saying them as that he genuinely doesn't believe in Tchias HaMesim or anything like that. Yeah. Okay. Another pasuk that Eov says in one of his speeches, he says, Hashem Sa'ara Yishufeni, he says, Hashem has wounded me with Sa'ara. Now, the word sa'ara can have two meanings. It can mean a hair, and it can also mean with a sin. It means a hair, with a samach, it means a storm. So, Hashem is sa'ara yishufeni, Hashem has wounded me with sa'ara, v'hir b'fsa'ay chinam, and Hashem has made me many, Hashem has caused me many bruises and wounds for nothing. So, Omar Rava, or Rabba, Eov b'sa'ara cheref, Eov then spoke chutzpedik again and then blasphemed Hashem using the word sa'ara, or b'sa'ara hashivuhu, and when he was replied to by Hashem, when Hashem appears to him near the end of the book, is also with sa'ara. B'sa'ara cheref, t'chtiv Hashem b'sa'ara yishufeni, when he says that Hashem has wounded and harmed me, with Sa'ara is like this. Amalafanav, he's saying, Rebbeinu Shlalem, Shema Ruach Sa'ara Avolafanecha, maybe a storm wind passed before you, and you it mixed up the letters, and now you confuse Eo with Oyev, and therefore you think I'm an enemy of yours. So he's saying, in other words, so he's blaspheming and criticizing Hashem using a storm wind and claiming that that something like that can prevent Hashem from knowing what the truth is. Marsha points out, you know, all this time we're saying Eov is denying the whole concept of Hashgacha Pratis. A major theme in quite a number of Eov's speeches is that, and a lot of Mephoshim explain in this way, is that one of Eov's basic premises is that there's no Hashgacha Pratis in the world, that everything is, there's the natural order, there's the stars and planets and whatnot, when a person happens to be under a bad mazel, then that's how it's going to be, and Hashem doesn't change that. So now he's also saying, therefore, Marsha says that he's saying that the malachi, the destructive malachim, are called in the pasuk ruach sa'ara. They're called a storm wind. And on top of that, also the word sa'ara, as in a hair, also factors in over here. Marsha refers to a Gemara tells us in Sukkah that la'asid lave, when Hashem kills the Yetzirah, then he's going to appear to the Rishoyim like a hair, and they're going to cry, how could we not have overpowered that little hair? Meanwhile, to the tzaddikim, he appears in the mountain, and they're going to cry, how do we ever overcome that mountain? Because both are true, of course. The Yetzirah begins as a little hair, but then you give him more and more power, and it becomes a gigantic, impassable mountain. So the Satan, the Yetzirah, really can be compared to a hair. So therefore, the Eiv is arguing that all these things are blocking your Hashgacha from the world. And therefore, that's how it happens that somebody like me, a good guy, a Ishtam V'Yosher, etc., is suffering all of this. In fact, Marsha points out that actually we find the relevant Gemara in Chagiga that tells us that one time the Malach HaMavis was sent to take a certain person's neshama, and he got mixed up and took the wrong person's neshama, and the Gemara deals over there with the aftermath of that is. So therefore, Eiv saying the same thing. You're leaving the Satan, who's Satan, who Yetzirah, Malach HaMavis, to run and do whatever he wants, and you're not supervising him, and therefore he can make mistakes, and that would explain what's going on over here. In fact, there are psukim, Marshall also points out, there are psukim elsewhere in Eiv, where he actually explicitly says, for example, V'sach sheveni lo'oyev loch, you consider me to be an enemy to you. So in other words, you're literally taking my name and treating it as though I'm your enemy. So that's the chiruf, that's the blaspheming Hashem that he says such a thing, and that he pretends that he thinks that Hashem doesn't control things in the world. Yad Yosef brings over here an interesting point. This very pasuk that he's saying, Asher b'sa'ara yishufeni v'hirba, the initials of those four words rearranged spell Eiv or Oyev. So literally, he's hinting in these words over here this idea that he thinks the letters have been mixed up, and therefore Hashem doesn't, and therefore Hashem thinks that he's an enemy. That he's an enemy, yeah. We talked about yesterday, by the way, what something that Ben Yehoyada says. Again, there's a certain truth to what Eiv is saying, because we said when it says Yumincha Hashem Tirats Oyev, then the Arizal says Attaka means that at that point Eiv was decided because of the advice that he had given Paray and all that, the advice that he hadn't given Paray, rather, that therefore he's destined to Yisurim. But yeah. Anyway, this Sa'ara Hashivu, he was responded with Sa'ara, with a storm wind, which also means a hail. Hashem responded to Eiv from the storm wind. And Hashem says to him, bind up your loins, your waist, like a man. And the metaphor throughout Tanakh is people would wear long flowing robes, and when you have a hard job to do, or a war to fight or whatever, then you put on your belt, you tuck yourself in, you put on your belt, and now you can do whatever it is you need to do. So Ezernuk Gever Chalotzecha is a metaphor meaning pull yourself together and be ready to talk. Rashi, by the way, on the psukim, points out that also, now you have to ask, if Eiv is sitting there suffering and scratching himself with his shchin and all that, how is he going to be in any frame of mind to answer Hashem in any logical way? Rashi says, actually, from this pasuk we learn that at that point, Hashem healed Eiv of all of his infirmities. So now he's taka physically strong and hale and hearty again, and taka ready, to, and Hashem has him ready to answer him if he can think of any answer. Anyway, so Hashem says, Ash'ocha, I'll ask you some questions, and you tell me your opinion. The first one is Omalei, Hashem tells him, and here's where Sa'ara, as in a hair, comes in. Habin nimin barothi b'roshi shel Adam, or b'Adam. I created many hairs on a person's head or on a person's body in general. Every single hair, I created its own follicle. So that two hairs don't get their nourishment from the same follicle. Each hair has its own little follicle, its own little hole in the skin from which it grows, from which it gets nourishment. You don't have two hairs, never grow out of the same follicle. If two hairs were to get their nourishment, their life force from the same follicle, and keep in mind, hair as it is has very little chayus to it. You see, you cut your hair and it doesn't hurt, for example, so there's not even much chayus in each strand of hair, and nevertheless, if two of them were to grow out of one follicle, it would take out so much energy from the body that it would darken a person's eyesight. It would cause that the energy that goes into making his eyes work would be impaired, and he'd be half blind. So ben gumal gumal and ischalafli. Hashem says, I didn't even mix up one tiny little follicle with the other. Ben iyev loyev ischalafli, and you think I mixed up iyev and oyev? So this is minas sa'ara that Hashem answered him from a storm wind, but Hashem answered him with a mushal using the matter of hairs. Marshall points out, by the way, another angle on this as well. When Eev is claiming that you think that I'm an Oyev, listen, he says, Parai, I understand, is an Oyev, and in the simple meaning of the Psukim there in Oz Yasher, Yimin Hashem, Tirat's Oyev, Oma Oyev, Erda Fasig, refers to Parai. Meanwhile, what did I do? Sahako, when Parai said he wants to enslave the Jewish people, I was quiet, I didn't say anything. And you're treating me like Parai, so maybe you consider me to be of the same caliber as Parai. Now the fact is, again, we said before, there's the opinion, this follows the opinion that Eev was not a Jew and that he was one of Pare's Goyish advisors. Well, we know, Maharsha points out, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, that when it comes to Goyim, Hashem counts their bad machshavas as though they were actions. So therefore, again, there is a certain truth to what he's saying, but nevertheless, Hashem is saying that Hashem does look at even the tiniest little things, even the difference of the hair. Actually, Marsha points out that there is a difference in that regard. Marsha points out, based on the Gemara in Nida, there is actually a difference in that regard between hair on the head and elsewhere on the body. Elsewhere on the body, the Gemara says over there, Marsha brings, that you actually could have two hairs coming from one follicle, and that doesn't harm anything. Only on the hair, though, you never have that. Mm-hmm. Now, the point is, though, man, more than any other creature, has hair on their head, unlike most other creatures have hair all over their bodies, but man is unique, that they have hair on their head and not very much on the rest of the body. And that represents the fact that you have a neshama, which is in your brain, in your head, more so than anywhere else in the body. In Sifrei Kabbalah, it talks about that hair is mosrei hamoichin. You have like the excess energy of the brain goes into growing hair. So what does that mean when a person is bald? That means that you don't have any excess energy to spare, or maybe the other way around. It means there's more even than Anyway. It's brought, by the way, I think also about the Rogachover. It says, you know, you see the pictures of him, his hair is all wild all over the place. They say, I've heard it said that one thing is, he had, given that hair is moisture hamoichin, it's the excess energy of his brain was so tremendously active and great that even his hair had enough chayus in it that it would hurt when you cut it, and therefore he avoided cutting it. There are different other reasons. When he was six, he was brought to Yechidus, to the Tzemach Tzedek, and the Tzemach Tzedek told him to learn Masechta Nazir, so he lived much of his life as a quasi-Nazir, and therefore didn't cut his hair. There's different things I've heard. Anyway, the point is, Hashem is saying, again, that you have this tremendous Hashgacha Pratis, specifically on the person, and you have, and every hair has its own individual follicle. So, what makes you think that I would mix up such a major thing as between Eev and Oyev? This Gemara is also in Nida, by the way, because the Gemara discusses it in connection with the matter of Shei Cyrus being a simon of adulthood. So the Gemara mentions this point over there as far as follicles and hairs. The Oruch HaNerger there gives an explanation that When Iyev is arguing that you mixed up Iyev and Oyev, what he's saying basically is, Hashem, you're allowing the Midas Hadin, sort of along the lines of what Maharsha is saying over here, with the Satan, you're allowing the Midas Hadin, which is represented by hairs, to do whatever it wants. And Hashem responds to him, no, on the contrary, I make sure, even when it comes to Midas Hadin, that two things of Din don't come from the same source, because that would be too much Din for the world. So what makes you think that I mixed up things with you? Then Hashem continues with another argument to Iyev. One of the psukim over there in Hashem's speech to Iyev, Hashem says, "Mi filag l'shetef ta'ol avagomer." Who separated? Who divided out for the flood of water a channel? What does this mean? Habit tipin barasi ba'oven, Hashem says, I created many drops of water in the clouds. V'chol tipa v'tipa barasi l'abfus b'fnei atzma. For each individual drop of rain, I created its own form, its own place where it comes out of. So that two drops don't come out of the same channel, of the dfus in later Hebrew means a printing press, but basically the word dfus means like a form or channel, like a shape, sort of a thing to shape something. So I make sure that two drops don't come out of the same shape. Then it would wash away the earth. It would make Rashi explains it would make the earth too muddy. Because then you'd have too much rain concentrated in one place, it would make mud. So and the result would be that area of the land would not be fruitful anymore, because the good topsoil would be washed away. So again, I didn't mix up even one drop with another. And you think I mixed up Iyev and Oyev. So again, you see, in other words, it's not just within the human body. You see, even the tiniest physical thing, a drop that Hashem makes, everyone has its own path.
A drop of what?
A drop of rain. Every drop of rain has its own path. So the Gemara says, "My mashmah dahi ta'ola lishna didfusu." Where do we see the pasuk is saying "mitfilag l'shetef ta'ola"? Where do we see that the word ta'ola means a form or a shape like that, to shape something? And the answer is Amar Rav Ba'ula or Shila Dichtiv. You find by Eliyahu Baharakamel Vayas Ta'ola Kveis Sosayim Zera. After he built the Mizbeach that he's going to offer on Harakamel, then he had a trench dug all around the Mizbeach and filled with water. So now when the fire comes down from the Shemayim and burns everything, and it's not even stopped by the water, and it even dries up and licks up all the water, then everybody will realize that's a nest. So we see therefore that the word Ta'ola means a channel. In that case, to channel the water, and in this case over here, to channel every individual raindrop. So again, Hashem is saying to Iyev, I take care of even those tiniest little details. Then Hashem continues in the same pasuk, the derech lahaziz koilus, and I create a separate way for each thunderclap. What does that mean? Have a koilus v'rosi ba'ovim. I created many thunderbolts in the clouds. V'chol kol v'kol v'rosi le'shvil b'fnei atzmai. For every thunderbolt, I created its own path. You see, even you look at pictures of a lightning bolt, no two are ever the same. If two thunderbolts were to come out of so that two thunderclaps don't come out of the same path, if two of them were to come on the same path, they would destroy the whole world. Why? Because Ben Yehoyada points out, it's not just you would say, okay, so you have a thunder clap that's twice as loud. No, it would be exponentially much more powerful, and therefore it would be so much energy that it would destroy the world. So Ben Kola Kola Nischalafli, so I don't even confuse one thunderbolt with the other, Ben Iyev L'Oyev Nischalafli, and you think I mixed up Iyev and Oyev? So here also, in other words, so far, Hashem has given Iyev three examples of with the hairs on the head, with the individual drops of rain, and with the thunder, which is also part of Maisa Bereshis, which is why you have when you see lightning, you say Oisa Maisa Bereshis, because those are like a reenactment of the original work of creation that Hashem made. So each one of those, Hashem is telling Iyev, I make sure I take care to the nth degree that it should be, that everything should be perfect. And you think I'm mixing things up. And so we'll continue tomorrow, best Hashem, with more examples that Hashem gives Iyev of this, where of the exquisite amount of Ashgacha Pratis that Hashem puts into every detail of the world. Yemiyem Mashiach Ha'Gola, Yudzayin Shvat. The inner purpose, the inner toichen of Golos is, the Rebbe says, the revelation of a new light. Because as we're coming closer to it, then we get further away from the Ashpa, from the outflow of Gilui Elokus. Therefore, as we come closer to Mashiach, the Golos gets stronger and stronger. There are other sichas where the Rebbe talks about other angles on that, because it's not only because of that, but also because it means now there's more choshech to be transformed into Ur, and all kinds of other explanations like that. But the fact, in other words, that we see that the Golos in some ways seems to be getting worse and worse, that shouldn't discourage us, just the opposite. It means that we're getting closer to the time of that Ur. The time of the Gola, to the time of the light of the Gola, yeah. So we started talking yesterday in Hilchos Tzitzis about how a person is supposed to wear a talis. So there's this idea that because the bracha is leisatik v'tzitzis, therefore you have to wrap katifas eishmeilim. This is, by the way, an interesting thing, you know. But in the times of the Gemara, the Chazal didn't have to define for us exactly how the wrapping is done, because it was a known thing. Everybody wears a talis, and everybody wraps themselves in it in a certain way. It seems that after the times of the Gemara, at some point, as fashions changed and people started wearing different styles of clothing, eventually it fell out of use to dress like that, and now, later on, the poskim have to kind of reconstruct how a talis is supposed to be worn, because of the bracha leisatif tzitzis, that implies that there's wrapping involved. There is, in fact, actually, there's a relevant Gemara about this in Nidorim, where Rabbi Yehuda mentioned, at one point, the Gemara mentions over there, Rabbi Yehuda had managed to get a hold, who was otherwise very poor, at one point he managed to get a hold of a piece of fabric and make for himself a coat. The Gemara mentions over there, he and his wife would have to share the coat. When she went out shopping, she'd wear it, and when he went to the Beis Medrash, he'd wear it, because they couldn't afford two of them. But still, Rabbi Yehuda was so grateful for it that he made a special bracha on it, sha'atani me'il, that Hashem clothed me, that Hashem wrapped me with a coat. So now the Vilna Goin wants to use that as one of the proofs for how a talus is supposed to be worn, because sha'atani is from Lashon Leis Atif. It's also related to this word wrapping. It's a matzedek, and his chedushim says on it that it's not really a solid proof. What he's saying is correct, but you can't really prove it from that particular gemara. But so you see, like the poskim, Rishonim and Acharonim, have to kind of reconstruct how a talus is supposed to be worn based on the nusach of the bracha. Anyway, so the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, so again, one opinion was that the only valid way is to wrap yourself in it like atifas eishmeilim, and that means to cover most of your face. So okay, we talked about yesterday that minhag chabad is only to cover your eyes. But now, yesh oimrim, that no, any time you have a garment of four corners, even if you don't wrap yourself in it, would be chayiv in tzitzis. So in other words, according to the first opinion, only a talis gadol would be chayiv in tzitzis. A talis katan in principle would not, because you don't wrap yourself in it. But according to the second opinion, it's chayiv in tzitzis no matter what, because the pasuk says on the corners of their garments, and that means any kind of garment. And after all, the Torah doesn't even hint to the whole concept of wrapping yourself. Why did the Chacham make the bracha leisatif tzitzis? Because that was how they dressed in those times. They would wrap their head in their talis. Even then, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, according to this way of looking at it, they wouldn't wrap themselves like atifas eishmeilim, like the way the Arabs do. They would wrap themselves like the way people wrap themselves, people robe themselves in their clothing, and they do their work. Sometimes their head is covered, sometimes their head is uncovered. Therefore, even if we're saying leisatif v'tzitzis, according to this way of looking at it, you wouldn't necessarily need more. Not necessarily do you have to cover and wrap up your head with the talis. Now, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say the halacha is like a second opinion. So therefore, you don't have to the whole time you're wearing the talis be katifas eishmeilim. But to be mekayim mitzvah and amokhar, what you should do is do katifas eishmeilim when you're doing the bracha. Stand like that for four amas, and while you're standing there in the city, you have the psukim over there, mayoko chastachay lekin, that you say during that time. That way, you yotze even according to the first svara, because the main kapeda is that when you're wearing it, when you're first putting it on, then you should be katifas eishmeilim according to that first opinion. According to the second opinion, it's not even necessary, but once you stand like that for four amas, then you yotze both opinions. And we'll continue to talk about tomorrow, Beis Hashem, we'll talk about, so what about when you're wearing a talis cotton, what do you do as far as that, as far as putting it on, as far as the bracha?